And welcome to episode 25 of Season to Taste. It is our Silver Jubilee episode, but we haven't watched Silver Nemesis. No. Well, we did watch Silver Nemesis, but we did that ages ago. Mm-hmm. We have watched a story from Season 16.
Yep.
That's where the randomizer sent us in the last episode. We chose Serial 5D, which by definition is five times better than One Direction. So, Matthew, what did you think of Doctor Who and the Prisoner of Zenda? That's the androids of Tara, by the way.
I don't know. It's good.
Do you know, it's funny you say that, because actually my reaction to watching it was, it's good. having gone in going, oh yes, this is one of the stories that, as we said in the last episode, a chunk of fandom rate as the best of the Key to Time. And it was, you know, it's hard to point out major faults in it, but I didn't come away loving it.
No, me neither. It strikes me as a kind of acceptable and competent in every way, which I suppose, to be fair, in the Graham Williams produced seasons is a bonus, because quite often that's not the case. But everything worked, it was well cast, the script was funny, as you would expect from David Fisher, but it in no way engaged me like the Stones of Blood. This is really representative of how I feel about season 16, which is it's well made, it looks pretty good. They've kind of ironed out the problems of the previous year, but I find it very difficult to get that excited about anything in this season, barring the Stones of Blood.
I think it's a story which slightly prides itself on its own cleverness. And that's in the comedy as well as in the plot. But I don't feel, apart from Madame Lamia, there's no character I really care about. Early on, she's quite good. It's nice to have a female yeah. engineer character. But in episode 3, she's reduced to doing it all because she fancies Count Grendel.
Well, see, I quite like that bit because I think it runs all the way through. I think there's a line in the first or second episode where Grendel says, oh, I showed her a certain favour once.
There's some lovely stuff done around it, and the lines about, you know, Grendel says to her, what would I do without you? And she says, I imagine you just get another peasant who's good at androids.
Mm.
And there's a bit where she's teased by Romana about it, and that all works very well. But it does mean that her character motivation becomes her relationship with Grendel rather than her skill as an android maker.
Yeah, and I think I quite like the way that they play it, particularly Peter Jeffrey kind of plays it where he's trying to make the Count very detached and cool about it, but you see that it actually has quite shaken the Count when she's killed, and he's actually, it's not just, oh, you fools, you've killed Madame Lamia, and rolls his eyes. He actually plays the line. There's a genuine kind of note in his voice that is sad.
There is, but I'm not sure it's played because of his relationship with her. I think it's played because she's a vital part of his plan to become
it could
king,
be, yeah, maybe.
And he's lost the person who's going to build him his androids.
It could be that, yeah.
There are lots of good characters in it. I think Reinhardt is a really good performance, particularly the variation between real Reinhardt and android.
Yeah, and there's Reinhardt. That very funny bit where the android king starts to butt into conversations and everyone has to kind of remind themselves that he's not the real one because he's actually more intelligent than the king.
And my problem with the characters, who are all very good and they all have what, you know, they're all scheming in their own ways, is they're all aristocrats really, apart from, you know, the strange Scottish guy and Madeleine.
Yeah.
And so it's all piffling Prisoner's End style, who's going to rule type story, but there's no actual real people they're going to rule over.
Yeah, it's almost
and it makes
like,
a difference to.
It's almost like if you did Rebos Operation, took Garen Ernstoff out of it.
Yeah,
the story wouldn't work.
No Garen Ernstoff. Yeah. You've just got people mincing around, and it's a bit like that. I'm like, I don't really understand what difference it makes to normal Tarans. Which of these people is in charge? And actually, the indication is that Grendel could take Reinhardt's lot in a straightforward battle, because he has the bigger army. It rather implies he has more support generally than they do. There's no outpouring of love from peasants, is there? Because we don't see any of them.
You know, I didn't really reflect on that while we were watching it. I see your point, but I find it difficult to pick anything about the story that I dislike or I could particularly criticise. I mean, it is a pretty straightforward adaptation of The Prisoner of Zenda.
There are bits where you kind of go, you're just doing this because that's what happens in The Prisoner of Zenda, yeah. But it's that much of a copy.
I mean, I like the fact that, for once, it's the companion who has a double rather than the Doctor.
Yes.
But, as I said, I find it hard to find anything that I dislike about it, but equally, there's not a lot I love about it. And I think one thing that did strike me while I was watching it and I was thinking, well, the first Romana reminds me in a lot of ways of Mrs. Peel out of The Avengers. She has this kind of air of detachment and slight disdain about everything that's happening around her. It makes it very arch and quite amusing, but at the same time, I wonder if that's part of the reason why I find it hard to warm to this season. I think Mary Tam's very good at what she does, and Romana's an interesting character, but there's no one in that story that's human and from Earth and, you know, is an audience viewpoint character. It's two Time Lords, a load of other lords and their people, a robot dog. And I was there, sitting there at the end thinking, I wonder if actually the companion is much more important than I've ever really thought about before, because the seasons that I think tend to work the best are the ones where there's a really good companion. And maybe that's a result of good writing rather than, you know, the reason why I like the season. But as you know, one of the series that I dislike most in the modern era are the ones with Amy in, because I never warmed to that character, and I think she's very difficult to warm to. And I wonder whether that makes it more difficult to get into the story if there's no one that you kind of really feel sympathetic for.
I agree to some extent, and I certainly felt that way in the first episode. I remember thinking that when Romana was getting captured, she was taking it so coolly and so in her stride that I couldn't really care about it. But then shortly afterwards, when they're actually going to operate on her, she's properly concerned and you can actually sympathise with it. But to begin with, she's very casual about the fact that she'd been captured at all. I know, even at the beginning of the story, she lands the TARDIS.
Yeah.
She's not English.
Which
she's
is
not
good,
exactly...
very River Song-ish, isn't it? Yeah, you're right. When she's captured originally, it's all a bit of a mild inconvenience to her rather than being, you know, you can imagine Sarah Jane would be screaming and frightened and Liz Sladen would be giving it all the different facial expressions, whereas Mary Tam just plays it with a slight raised eyebrow and, ugh, well, this is going to delay me slightly getting back in time for the next Key to Time segment.
Episode 3, Ultimate Romana, all she really does is escape and get captured again in true Doctor Who
style. I mean, she imparts an important bit, or a relatively important bit of information to the group in the hut before she gets abducted again.
She tells them that the Princess is alive for the working lab bases anyway.
But even when she's kidnapped that second time, as she's riding away, she's not screaming and...
Yeah,
and giving that kind of reaction. It's very much like, oh, Doctor, help me, as though she's thinking, you silly man, why are you standing there, rather than just rescuing me. I mean, I don't think it's a problem. I think, well, obviously do think it's a problem, although I wouldn't raise it. I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's good that there's a female companion who's very capable, who can land the TARDIS, who's very smart and has her wits about her and is able to, you know, trade banter with Count Grendel and all the rest of it. But however good I think Mary Tam is at that part, I'm just not sure Romana was the best idea for a companion.
I think one of the other problems with the story is one of its strengths. It's a very funny story and there are some really clever lines, some really witty bits of dialogue. There's a nice comic opening in the TARDIS with Romana and K-9 and the Doctor, which I'd much prefer than them just arguing.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
But for all that maybe we associate season 17 as being the most whimsical comedic season, I felt this had gone slightly too far that way. Tom is in full-on grabbing every laugh where he can get it mode, muttering lines in the middle of conversations.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a law unto himself in it feels. But I also get the impression they're going for every humorous moment they can, and it's at the expense of the tension in the story, because things are treated as frivolous that shouldn't be. Early on, when the doctor's captured, it's a very much a kind of, well, if you keep burning my scarf, then you'll have to kill me.
Yeah.
So that's quite amusing, but it doesn't have an air of him being really concerned either about being captured. The swordsman puts out his electric sword, which is a lovely idea, and the doctor just batters it to one side with no injury. at all, because that's a nice physical piece of humour. And there's quite a lot of that in the story, right down to the very end, where it's a really good sword fight at the end.
Yeah.
Although episode 4 is incredibly padded. You have two bits of exposition, almost identical, about the marriage plot, and then a very long sword fight. Yeah. But it's a good sword fight. But it begins with the Doctor turning his back on Grendel's sword. And yes, that's an opportunity for the Doctor to buffoon around a bit, but there's a point where you go, you're having a sword fight, you wouldn't turn your back on the lethal weapon. And Grendel hits him on the back with it.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be a sword. That's actually the kind of thing that, you know, a proper sword, that would do. Just one whack on the back.
Yeah. I think you're right. I said at the time, because we were discussing it while we were watching it unfold, and I wondered if it was a bit of a reaction to the way that Pertwee would have played that, which would be to grab the sword with both hands and leap into the sword fight as he does with the Master and the Sea Devils. But actually, on reflection, clearly Tom's been doing this now for as long as Pertwee did. And I think any need to kind of prove that the Fourth Doctor is different from the Third is long, long past. So I think you're right. I think it is just Tom looking for how he can play things for laughs. And I think you're probably right. This is, again, maybe one of the reasons why the story is hard to care that much about, because actually there is no tension. Actually, there is no real peril for any of the characters. The Doctor, Romana, and particularly K-9, who's a gun platform here, just swan through the story in no real danger. It's all very charming and nice and Avengers-ish, but there's a reason why Doctor Who's better than the Avengers, and it's because actually it can do more than be just a kind of summery, charming thing. Mm. And I think a lot of the stories in this season lack a little bit of what makes Doctor Who really great, while at the same time avoiding any of the pitfalls that made season 15 so ropey.
Yeah.
It just feels like in a strange way, it just feels like a really playing it safe season. Tom's being allowed to do what he wants to do. Romana is never really particularly troubled by any of the adventures. K-9's there to get them out of trouble if they need someone shot, or they need to get a hole cut in a wall or something like that. It's just, I think with those three characters, it's very difficult to generate any real tension, because, you know, two of them can regenerate if they get badly injured and one of them's a robot. I think it's less problematic, actually, when Lala Ward comes in, because although she plays Romana as very smart, she plays her with much more human reactions, I think, in a much less detached and icy way.
Maybe. I find Romana too quite icy and detached as well.
She tends to get more screamy about things, though, doesn't she? And although she does do arch things, she also, like in Remembrance of the Daleks, gets very menaced by the Daleks.
In Destiny,
gets very flustered by the Daleks.
Yeah, maybe. But yes, I think it's all quite aloof, isn't it? And the Doctor says at one point something like not being interested in meddling in the politics of your piffling little planet. And the problem is he's just reminding the audience that's all this is. It is just the politics of a piffling little planet.
I mean,
and all the people who are vying, they're so rude to the peasants. Actually, they should all be overthrown anyway. They should just instead of a public and be done with it.
The piffling little planet line, I can imagine probably all of the Doctors pretty much saying something like that. I can imagine Eccleston being outraged by a load of aristocrats and telling them he's not interested in their piffling affairs. I don't think the line itself is a problem. I just think I think you're right, it kind of symbolises the fact that there's nothing particularly worth caring about. Do we really care who's the king of the planet?
Is
Prince Reinhard actually any better? Or is he going to give the peasants any better a time than Count Grendel? Who knows? You never see why one lot are preferable than the other. Other than Grendel's clearly being a bit villainous.
In the way that basically, that's how wars of succession work.
Yeah.
That's how it happens.
But I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like I'm having to justify why I'm not over the moon about the story. I mean, I enjoyed it while I was watching it. I wasn't sitting there thinking, oh, this is dreadful, oh, this is crap. I was watching it thinking, yeah, it's quite fun. If this was in 25 minutes after I had dinner on a Saturday, then it'd be all right.
I was watching it thinking, this is fine, but I'm not engaged by it. I'm quite happy for it to be over soon. I'm enjoying the odd joke here and there, but I don't really care what happens.
Yeah.
I think it has some other plot problems. They're minor things. The classic Doctor Who guards who can't shoot straight. So they managed to hit Madame Lamia spot on, even though she wasn't supposed to be the person they were shooting. But anyone else, however close or nearby, the Doctor never gets hit, Romana never gets hit, even when they're point-blank range. And I know that's a standard Doctor Who thing, but just because it's just something to do with the way it's done in the story, they seem particularly incompetent. And the cliffhanger resolution where, at the beginning of episode 3, you know, the Doctor has the exciting moment at the end of episode 2 where he jumps down from the throne and smashes up Android Princess Strella.
Mm.
And then in the beginning of episode 3 goes, oh yes, I heard a little spark, didn't you? And like, what? You heard a spark? Not only is that stretching it a bit, and I didn't feel the most convincing justification for having gone and smashed someone's head in.
Mm.
He's standing next to an android himself on the stage, on the raised platform.
Mm.
How does he know that a tiny little spark that he's heard isn't coming from the android that's right next to him? he's a Time Lord, he's obviously got very good hearing, but it didn't feel like the most satisfactory explanation for what had happened. But actually that scene I thought worked really well, the coronation. I liked the kind of orb and scepter,
yeah,
and the lines that all seemed part of the tradition of a real state. It conjures up really well the idea that this is an established monarchy. And the Archimandrite is a lovely word to trot out.
Yes.
And also Cyril Shapps is very good here with his brilliant hat and his brilliant beard and funny moustache. And Cyril Shapps being great. You know, Peter Jeffrey as well, although he has one moment just after Romano escapes where he goes a bit too far into comedy hamming. Mostly he's hamming it up in exactly the right way. Yeah. He's going for proper pantomime villain, but staying the right side of the line.
Yeah.
And hitting exactly what he needs to do. And the bit where he talks about how many times he'll refuse the crown, there's kind of Julius Caesar-esque references.
Well, Richard III-esque as well.
Is it as well?
I think in Richard III, he refuses twice and takes it the third time.
I mean, as well as being Zenderish, this is obviously very Richard III, Wars of the Roses-ish, isn't it? He's very much playing it in that mould.
I like the fact that the costume design has clearly gone for that kind of Southeast Europe, vaguely Turkish influence, kind of helmets and robes.
I mean, Archimandrite is a kind of orthodox role.
So I think Zender was supposed to be in the Balkans, wasn't it? That looks like it's kind of Balkany in some of its style.
It's got that kind of Renaissance-y. It's like steampunk, but earlier. I like that they find the segment straight away.
Yes, that makes a nice change.
Because, rather than just having it tacked on at the end, that's done, and then the issue is getting away and getting it back to the TARDIS. Obviously, the one other massive weakness in the episode is, fortunately forgotten by episode 2, is the Tarwyn Wood Beast, which is... It looks like the cyber shades with the different faces.
It does, and the way it runs off looks like a cyber shade as well. Very, very, very cute.
So yeah, I thought there are things to enjoy about it, particularly in the design and the performances.
I've been critical before about Graham Williams' maybe inability to make the series to the standard that had been laid down by his predecessors. But I think, you know, the budget only shows through a couple of times in the story. Mostly they've paid for a night shoot, they've got the good costumes, they've got a good location.
It's a very good
budget, yeah. They've got some nice music. I mean, for 90% of its runtime, it works really well. I think the only time where it was conspicuously low budget was the raid on the castle at the end, where I just probably wouldn't have had a shot of only 5 people running in through the gates to storm and take the castle.
But then this is that slightly odd thing about, you know, you get the impression that Reynard really only has about 5 men, and this is why you go, well, does Grendel not have more support? And actually, is Grendel's more support 7 men? Is that really the scale that we're on? Well, they talk about ruling the whole of Tara, but you know, Princess Strella talks about suzerainty. There's clearly lots of different regions who have their own monarchs anyway, and actually quite what you really get for this. This is where we get back to, you never see a real town or real people, and so it's hard to know really what the victor actually wins.
So, yeah, if it had been made probably just a few years earlier when the budget could stretch further, like, I was thinking The Mask of Mandragora, I'm sure there were loads more extras who would have been running around.
And when Tom would be slightly more reined in.
Yeah. But, you know, my reservations are more that I didn't wholeheartedly love it than the fact that I disliked it or didn't enjoy it. I thought it was a perfectly fine story.
I thought it was well made. Yeah, perfectly competent. I just, the tone was slightly wrong for me. I think that's really my main problem with it. And so even though it was fun, it wasn't as engaging as I'd have liked.
It needed an Emilia Rumford or a Susan Engel to really... Well, it needed an Emilia Rumford. It needed someone that I kind of could sympathise with and
a big road, a heretic.
Felt for, yeah. The Fourth Doctor at this point in time is too all-powerful. And I think it was a mistake to give overmighty Tom Baker another couple of companions who were pretty overmighty as well. I just think that team, it's hard to make them work.
Well, we have season 17 still to come, so we'll have another look at that when we do that. Cool, well that was season 16. Let's fire up the randomizer and see where we're going next. Well, I had an inkling it might be this season.
Okay. Is it some kind of psychic incident?
A little bit. Partly because I was pondering what we would watch from this season because of a comment on the podcast that someone made to me. But also because it was actually the coming up release that we watched the trailer for at the end of The Androids of Tara on that DVD. It is season 13.
Okay.
So yes, the at the end of The Androids of Tara, the coming up trailer is for Planet of Evil. So, second Tom Baker season.
Yep.
We can choose between
Terror of the Zygons,
Planet of Evil, Pyramids of Mars, the Android Invasion,
the Brain of Morbius,
and the Seeds of Doom. How many is that? F, G, H, J, K, 6 stories to choose from.
Correct.
Yes, the reason I'd had Planet of Evil in mind already was that after we were talking about Mark of the Rani, and we were discussing how nice it was to be on location in a real wood and having real trees, we talked about film studio shooting in what I thought was Face of Evil.
Yeah.
And occasional Season to Taste correspondent Richard, if that is his real name, got in touch to ask whether actually did I mean the forest in Planet of Evil.
Mm.
And I don't think I did. I think I meant Face of Evil. But I did say then, well, actually, we've still got season 13 to do, and maybe... and therefore, of course, we'll consider comparing forests in Planet of Evil. But that's one of six stories, so yeah. What are your instinctive reactions to those six?
I'd watch any of them. I think it's a good season. The stories that are particularly good are probably Terror of the Zygons. That's pretty fantastic, and I haven't watched it very often because... I think it was one of the very last videos to come out, at least the unedited version. Pyramids of Mars is very familiar, but I suppose it's very good. Maybe it's coming for a bit more flack in recent years, but I think it's still very well regarded. Seeds of Doom, great fun. Brain of Morbius.
Newly sequelised,
yeah. And then the two weaker stories of the series... Planet of Evil and The Android Invasion, I haven't watched nearly as much. Of the two, I've probably watched The Android Invasion least, and that would be quite interesting to rewatch. Planet of Evil, I've watched more. There's lots of nice touches to it. Overall, it's a little bit boring. But
is The Android Invasion, is that the last time we see John Levine and Ian Marta?
Yes.
That would be an interesting reason to look at that. And the three, this is a season of two threes for me. The three that I have seen loads and loads and loads of times, and Pyramids of Mars was one of the first or two stories that I saw.
Yeah.
And I think my local video shop had it, and so my brother and I watched it quite a bit. And then it was repeated as well. I think I had an off-air copy after it was repeated that I watched quite a bit. I still remember my brother pointing out the hand on the chair and me not quite believing it and having to rewind and have another look. And it's really good. But I have seen it a lot. But then actually I haven't watched any of these six recently.
No.
So, although there's some I know quite well, even those, the memory's faded a little. Brain of Morbius, I remember seeing early on in the video releases.
Mm.
And the Seeds of Doom, a classic adventure that obviously Harrison Chase, a brilliant villain. That's one I've seen loads. And then, yeah, like you, I haven't actually seen Terror of the Zygons that many times. I don't have as warm a feeling towards it as other people seem to, and I'm not quite sure why that is.
That's another newly sequelised story, of course, as well.
Yes, in the same
kind of...
As part of the same anniversary, yes. Yeah. Planet of Evil, I've never much... It's odd, it's another one I kind of feel like I don't really like, and I'm sure the last time I watched it, I was more than happy with it, so I'm puzzled with that. And the Android Invasion, I remember very little about. There's that shot of Sarah's face falling off that I remember very clearly because it was in something like 30s in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And something about them going to a pub in the village, and something about an eye patch. Is that Android Invasion, or is that one of Nicholas Corner's convention stories? I'm not quite sure. So yeah, I'm torn, because the ones I like, I'd quite like to watch again. It's been a long time since I've seen them.
Yeah.
And the ones I'm not so keen on, I've hardly seen, and so I'm tempted to give them another go. And then somewhere in the middle is Terror of the Zygons.
Harsh.
No, not by which I mean I like it better than the other two, and I've seen it slightly more, but it's not one that I've seen loads or have loved.
Well, that's the last time we see the whole UNIT team in action.
It is, yes.
So it's kind of UNIT's last hurrah, because I think the next two times they come back with Tom Baker, they're getting more and more diminished.
Well, there's no Brigadier, is there?
Yeah.
And when the Brigadier comes back, he's not with the rest of the team.
Yeah, and then the next UNIT story after 1976 is, what, 1989? So there's a huge long gap then, and it's a totally different team.
So we get a little bit in the Five Doctors. That's
UNIT. Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
But even so, it's completely different people.
It's a hard one, actually.
Because there are none I want to particularly rule out. Even like the Brain of Morbius that I'm inclined to rule out for having seen so much, I can't quite... I can remember, you know, the mind-bending and that kind of thing. I can't quite place how the Sisterhood fit into the actual story. I know they're there, I know they contribute to it, but how the scenes work and that kind of thing, I don't really remember very well. Maybe let's rule out the Seeds of Doom, because I know that one very well. And it's slightly longer, but it's fun for it. And it has got its own Amelia in.
Okay, we'll rule out, I think the only thing I think about the Seeds of Doom is that the Crinoid is ripe for a comeback, if there is any monster ripe for a comeback.
Okay, so we'll rule out the Seeds of Doom. I think if I was going to refresh my memory of one, I'd rather the Android Invasion than Planet of Evil.
Yeah, me too. So, I was going to say, the one that I'm least enthusiastic about, as you've probably picked up, is Planet of Evil.
So we'll take that out as well. I think maybe let's take out Pyramids of Mars.
Yeah, okay. I think it's so... Although I haven't watched it for a while, I think the minute that it goes in the DVD I remember all of this.
Yeah. And what have we got left? That leaves Zygons, Morbius, and the Android Invasion. It would be nice to watch the Zygons properly again. I think let's take out Brain of Morbius as well. Again, like Pyramids of Mars, I think a lot of it will be... Or certainly all the best bits will be very familiar.
Okay, I think we've whittled it down to Zygons and Android Invasion. Yeah. And I'm a bit torn now, because actually it might be interesting to watch the Android Invasion.
Mm.
It is so long since I've watched it. But then the other part of my brain is thinking, is it a bit perverse to pick what is widely acknowledged as the worst dud in one of the better series of Doctor Who? It feels a bit like a bit of a strange choice.
Is it the guy, he's called Guy something, isn't he? The eye patch guy. Crawford?
Guy Crawford or Crawford, I can't
remember.
Is
he Bennick from The Enemy of the World?
Yes, he is.
And we watched The Invasion of Time for season 15, so if we go for this, we get the trilogy of Milton John stories.
That's correct.
Seasons of Taste, in which we watched all of Milton John's.
I would be happy with either of those. I'm probably, in a really wrong and perverse way, vaguely more tempted by the Android Invasion, but I think that's probably bad and wrong.
Yes, I think it probably is. I think Zygons is... I suspect, rightly regarded as the much stronger story. You've got John Woodnutt making the third of his four good guest appearances in Doctor Who. You've got Ian actually being Harry. You've got the Brigadier in a skirt. You've got waving tentacles, etc., and the Loch Ness Monster. So lots and lots of really good reasons to watch it. So yes, let's watch the Android Invasion.
Okay.
Let's find out quite what we've been missing.
The Android Invasion it is.
Excellent. Tune in next time Woo. To see how we enjoy Doctor Who and the Android Invasion.
Our redemptive reading of it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.